Okay, so usually when I tell you to mark your calendars, it's for like a movie release or something. But this time,
This one feels different.
this one feels huge. We have a date that is genuinely going to shake up the gaming world. February 27, 2026.
It sounds like just some random Friday, but if you've been following the industry at all, you know that date is a massive deal. It's a
A
milestone.
huge one. We are looking at the 30th anniversary of Resident Evil. 30 years. And Capcom, well, they're not just dropping some mobile game to celebrate. They are swinging for the fences with Resident Evil Requiem.
Which is, of course, what we've all been calling Resident Evil 9 for what, years
30
now?
years, yeah. And we're not just speculating today. We have our hands on this massive 6,000-word analysis. It's titled Return to Raccoon City Hell. And honestly,
That might be an understatement.
it really might. This doesn't just sound like a sequel. It sounds like they're trying to rebuild the entire foundation of the series.
It's so ambitious. The word that keeps coming up when you read through this thing is bridge. They're trying to connect the gritty, the industrial horror of the old Raccoon City
Right, the roots.
with the more bizarre, almost supernatural direction the series has taken lately.
So our mission today is to figure out if that bridge can actually hold the weight. We need to unpack returning heroes, some genuinely disturbing new mechanics, and a virus that sounds like a greatest hits of biological terror.
It is a lot. And I think the only place we can really start is with the face of the franchise.
The man, the myth, the haircut, Leon S. Kennedy is back. But reading these notes, this doesn't sound like the Leon we know.
No, not at all. It's a very different vibe. This isn't the rookie cop, and it's not even the super spy from Resident Evil 4. The analysis actually describes him as an old man.
Which is just wild to think about. But it makes sense, right? 30 years of this stuff, the notes call him tired but deadly.
And that's the perfect description.
I love that energy. It's less, I'm here to save the day, and more, I'm way too old for this, but I'm the only one who can do it.
Exactly. He's literally revisiting his own trauma, going back to Raccoon City. And the gameplay reflects that. The combat for Leon is described as fast, violent, but it has a weight to it now.
Okay, but we have to talk about the one specific mechanic mentioned because it completely stopped me in my tracks. Leon has a hatchet.
A hatchet,
I
yes.
mean, what's he doing? Building a log cabin. Why on earth does Leon Kennedy need a hatchet?
Huh. No, it's a dedicated parry tool. So think about the RE4 remake.
Oh, it's the knife parry, yeah.
This sounds like an evolution of that, but way more visceral. It's not just an action movie move
So
anymore.
it's not just a get out of jail free card.
Not at all. It forces you to make a choice. In the old games, a zombie gets close, you shoot or you run. Now you have this third option, this melee parry. But it's risky.
You're letting them get right up in your face just to save one bullet.
Exactly. You're deflecting claws and teeth with this hunk of steel. It adds this really gritty physical layer to the combat.
That sounds incredibly stressful, but also super satisfying. But Leon is only half the picture.
There's a second protagonist, and this is where I think the real lore nerds are just going to lose it.
The name is the key. Grace Ashcroft.
Ashcroft. I mean, for a lot of people, that might not ring a bell, but if you played Resident Evil Outbreak on the PS2,
That name is legendary.
Alyssa Ashcroft, the reporter. I cannot believe they're finally acknowledging Outbreak. That game has been like the black sheep of the family for decades.
It really has. So bringing in Grace, her daughter, is a huge signal. It ties those old spinoffs right into the main timeline. But Grace is not Leon.
She's an FBI intelligence analyst, so a desk jockey.
Pretty much, yeah. She is not a soldier. Her whole motivation is personal. She's there to investigate her mother's death at a place called the Renwood Hotel.
And her gameplay reflects that vulnerability. The notes call her sections pure survival horror. They say she's scared and vulnerable. So we're talking full-on stealth. While Leon can stand his ground with his hatchet, Grace has to use her wits. She has to solve environmental puzzles. She cannot fight the horror. She has to outsmart it.
See, this is the part that makes me a little nervous. Splitting a game like that, action for one character, stealth for the other. It's so hard to get right.
It is.
I mean, we all remember Resident Evil 6. It tried to be everything to everyone, and it was a mess.
That's a totally valid concern that kitchen sink design has burned them before. But the analysis suggests this is more about pacing. Leon is the release of tension with combat. Grace is the buildup of tension through helplessness.
So if they nail the balance.
If they nail it, they could solve the series' biggest identity crisis. Do you want action or do you want horror?
And Requiem is saying, why not both? I just really hope the shift between the two isn't too jarring.
It's all about the execution. But the one thing that connects them is the threat. And the threat in this game, well, the biology of it is just fascinating.
The virus. Melantopus. It sounds so ancient. And what really got me is the recipe.
It's a hybrid. It's a cocktail of the two most important bioagents in the entire series. You've got the mold.
From RE7 and Village.
And the progenitor virus.
Okay, let's pause on that because that just sounds like sci-fi jargon. What does that mix actually mean for you, the player?
Okay, think of it like this. The progenitor virus, the thing that started it all, it's about physical mutation. You know, giant claws, extra limbs, body horror.
All the gross stuff.
All the gross stuff. The mold, on the other hand, is fungal. It's about consciousness, hallucinations, a hive mind. It's psychological horror.
So you mix them together and you get a giant monster that can read your mind while it's eating you.
That's pretty much it, yeah. The analysis specifically mentions unpredictable mutations. So an enemy might not just change physically, it could be projecting hallucinations at you at the exact same time.
That is just terrifying. It completely blurs the line between what's real and what's, you know, in your head.
And that ties directly into how you're supposed to kill these things. Because your standard 9mm bullets, they aren't going to be enough.
This is the part I'm still trying to process. The notes say you have to harvest blood to make special ammo. Walk me through that.
So it's a resource loop. The Melantopus virus makes these mutations incredibly unstable. Regular bullets might slow them down, but to stop the mutation for good, you need these special rounds.
And to get those rounds.
You need an agent derived from the virus itself. You have to get close to the monster, harvest its blood while it's stunned or maybe unaware, and use that to craft the very bullets you need for the next fight.
That is diabolical.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
Brilliant. It's a nightmare. The number one rule of any horror game is keep your distance. This mechanic just throws that right out the window. It forces you to get up close and personal with the thing you're terrified of.
It completely inverts the logic of survival horror. It creates this loop where your most valuable resource, your own safety, is the currency you have to spend to get ammunition.
It's risk-reward turned up to 1,000. So you either stay back and run out of ammo while the monsters keep changing, or you risk it all to stay in the fight.
It forces you to conquer that instinct to just run away. That's just really, really smart design.
And speaking of scary places, let's talk about the setting. We are going back to Raccoon City.
The ruins of Raccoon City.
Yeah, no, I have to be the skeptic here. For months, the big rumor was that RE9 was going to be fully open world. And every time I hear open world horror, I get nervous.
I do too.
You can't build tension if the player can just, you know, hop in a car and drive away. Does the report clear that up?
It does, and you can breathe easy. The analysis flat out debunks the fully open world idea. It calls the game semi-open world.
Semi-open. Okay, what does that actually mean?
Think less like a huge sprawling city and more like maybe God of War or The Evil Within 2. You've got these massive contained zones you can explore.
All right, wide linear is the term I think they use.
Exactly that. It gives you room to explore and find secrets, but you don't lose the story. And interestingly, it mentions vehicles.
Vehicles in Resident Evil.
To get around these ruined city zones, which is a first for the series, really. Usually you're in a car. It's a cutscene where you're just shooting out the window. This sounds like actual traversal.
I just hope it's not a driving simulator. But the report says the real horror isn't out in the streets anyway. It's at the Renwood Hotel.
The Renwood seems to be the classic dungeon of the game. If the city is the big open part, the hotel is the tight, claustrophobic haunted house. It's where Grace is doing her investigation.
It's giving me huge Skinner Mansion vibes. Just a dense, terrifying puzzle box. And inside that box, the game gives you a choice that might split the fan base all over again. Camera perspective.
First person versus third person.
And people have strong opinions about this. Some people couldn't stand the first person in Village. Others think third person isn't immersive enough.
It's just a smart move to include both. First person gives you that tunnel vision, that anxiety of not knowing what's behind you. It's perfect for Grace's vulnerable sections.
And third person gives you that tactical awareness. You get to see Leon's cool parry animations.
Right. It lets you choose your own flavor of horror. Do you want to be in the action or do you want to direct it? It shows a lot of confidence in their design.
Speaking of confidence, let's get into the tech. The RE engine is a monster. We all know that. But the report highlights something called Global Illumination 2.0. Now, usually lighting tech just means prettier shadows, but this sounds like a full-on gameplay mechanic.
It is 100% a mechanic. In older games, a dark corner is just, you know, a dark texture. Here, the engine is calculating how light bounces in real time, which allows for what the report calls absolute darkness.
Not just dim, pitch black.
Pockets of the world with zero light. And the enemies use it. They don't just stand in the dark, they actively hunt from it.
So you're walking down a hallway, your flashlight gives out, and you are completely blind.
And that's when the audio design takes over. The report says, in absolute darkness, the only way to identify where an enemy is by the sound of their breathing.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Yep.
Nope. That is pure visceral terror.
It weaponizes silence. You have to stand perfectly still and just listen. Is that breath on your left? Is it getting closer? Is it right in front of your face?
I can already feel my heart rate going up just thinking about it. And when you finally do see them and start shooting, well, the report gets pretty graphic about the gore system.
Layered tearing is the phrase they use.
It sounds disgusting. Is it just for shock value, or does it actually serve a purpose?
In survival horror, player feedback is everything. You need to know your shots are having an impact. This system means every bullet creates a unique wound. Flesh tears, you see bone shatter. It's not just some generic blood puff.
That makes the violence feel consequential.
Exactly. It reminds you that you're literally dismantling a physical threat piece by piece. And that insane attention to detail goes into the world building, too. Notes left in the ruins of the RPD.
The Raccoon Police Department. Man, going back there is going to be heavy.
It's a ruined nostalgia trip.
Yeah.
And those notes, they're not just lore for the sake of lore. They're filling in the gaps of what happened after the city was destroyed.
Which brings us to the guy who seems to be pulling all the strings. The main villain, Victor Gideon.
Gideon's interesting because he's not just a big monster. The report calls him a dual threat.
So he's strong enough to fight Leon, but smart enough to mess with Grace.
Pretty much. He's the physical threat to Leon, but to Grace, he's a psychological one. He's the one who holds the key to her mother's murder. He knows what happened at the Renwood Hotel.
So he's weaponizing the truth against her.
He's a villain who attacks your mind just as much as your body. He's the conductor of this whole thing, this requiem.
A requiem. A mass for the dead. It really does feel like they're trying to finally close the book on Raccoon City.
It feels like a final chapter, doesn't it? A way to put the ghosts of 1998 to rest.
So, zooming out, we have the hatchet parry, the blood harvesting, this insane hybrid virus, the semi-open world. What does it all add up to? Is this supposed to be the ultimate Resident Evil?
It's certainly trying to be the most complete version. It's a synthesis of 30 years of game design. It's taking the survival horror roots, the action-heavy middle years, and the new psychological stuff, and trying to fuse it all together.
It's a huge gamble. But if they actually pull it off,
it could set the standard for the next decade of the series.
Before we wrap this up, I have to ask you, of everything we just talked about, the tech, the lore, the mechanics, what's the one thing that really sticks with you? The hook that makes you desperate to play this?
For me, it's the virus mix. The psychological side of it. The idea that you might not be able to trust what you're seeing while you're fighting for your life. That layer of uncertainty, is the monster really changing or am I just losing my mind? That's powerful.
That's a good one. For me, it's got to be the blip for bullets. I just can't shake the tension of that gameplay loop. The idea that I have to actively put myself in more danger just to have a chance at surviving later. It feels so cruel and so perfect for this series.
It forces you to be brave. That's just brilliant design.
Okay, so that's our deep dive into what we know about Resident Evil Requiem. It is shaping up to be an absolute monster. February 27, 2026. The wait is going to be painful.
Extremely.
But I want to leave you and everyone listening with one final thought. We talked about that blood harvesting mechanic. You're using the enemy's own biology to create the weapons that kill them.
It brings up a pretty fundamental question.
In a world where you have to harvest the monster to kill the monster, at what point does the survivor become part of the infection? If you're using their blood to keep going, are you still entirely human when the credits finally roll?
Or have you become the very thing you were hunting all along?
Something to think about while you're sharpening your hatchets. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.
Stay safe out there.